you like your job? Do you believe in the company's vision? What type of leader do you want to be? If you answered yes, sometimes, the type that doesn't suck, then join Jay Fletcher and Brock Yorty on Leaders Drink Last podcast.
Good morning and welcome to Leaders Drink Last. Yes, I said good morning. You know, maybe the title this week should be Leaders Podcast Last, because it is Saturday morning, the day before Mother's Day. It's 10 a.m. Eastern, and we know that my favorite co-host, don't tell Dave, Jake, is in Las Vegas. So it is 7 a.m. his time, and it's been a few weeks since we put out episode one, which has had amazing feedback, and I appreciate everybody who's come back. And I texted Jake, and I was like, "We got to get this schedule so that we're active, and we're going to do that." But as it started, I go, "Jake, we have to do this weekend." And he texts back, and he goes, "Man, it's Mother's Day weekend, and I can try to fit something in Saturday, but there's no way I could do something Sunday because it's Mother's Day." And I was a boss hole. You know, I texted back and I was like, you know, I want to sprint with this this concept, and I'm excited about all the topics we can talk about. And I basically was like, get it together, Jake. And then as I thought about this, I was like, this is our passion project. And here I just pulled the A number one jerk move. And so we got it put together. And Jake, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. It has been a long 2 weeks for me as far as work and stuff, but I'm happy to be back here. And for the record, I didn't consider you pushing me to get on this morning as a boss hole move. You're one of my best friends, so anytime we can get together and do this stuff, you know, this is the reward for me to be able to get on here and talk about this stuff. So it's not a burden for me. It's not, you know, I've got my cup of coffee. I'm powering through. It's 7 o'clock. My Knights pulled it out in overtime last night, so I'm happy about that. And it's going to be a good Saturday.
That's a great segue there. Jake was on television with the Knights last week. Tell us about it, Jake.
Yeah, it was. It's pretty cool. You know, I met my wife when I got here to Las Vegas, and you know, when we first started dating, I asked her, you know, we should go to a Knights game because I had never been to a professional hockey game. And she said, "Well, I have season tickets, so I'll take you to a hockey game." And so from there, you know, a few seasons later, during the pandemic, they recorded these shows or these Zoom sessions where fans are like cheering, you know, for during the intermissions or when they score goals during the games on TV. And we got invited last fall, and the lady happened to remember us because they wanted to do a special on couples who got married. We got married outside of T-Mobile Arena. So, you know, she remembered our story. That's a mark of a good leader, is remembering things about people, things like that. So she remembered us out of all those people, and we got to be on TV, interviewed by Mike McKenna, former NHL goalie, pretty cool guy, very nice. So it was a neat experience.
And again, you started the podcast by, you know, just one-upping me with the fact that first you have a work beer cooler, and now you you married a woman who had season hockey tickets. I did not marry a woman with season hockey tickets. She's probably got a season pass to a shoe store for sure. But it's Mother's Day. And you met your best friend, and you two got married, and you had hockey, and you had all these things. And one of my great friends that I talk leadership about, and we barbecue together, all came from my wife, from my partner, one of her good friends, and our children's friends. a woman by the name of Devin, who is a boss for sure. My wife goes, we're going to have this barbecue and Devin and Habib are going to come over. And there's so many times when you're like, okay, you know, this is, you know, one, it's kids, friends. And how are you, who knows what's going to happen? Instead, I get this really cool dude who, works in, technology and the, med industry, by the name of Habib Baydoun. And, he's on with us today. He's a leader. And, without my partner introducing me to her friend and her badass partner, I would never have gotten to be friends with Habib. So introduce yourself. I've kind of done it a little bit. Habib, say hello to the group.
How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me on. Yep. My name is Habib Baydoun, to help Brock with the pronunciation, pick on him a little bit there. Just kidding. I work at a medical device company. I've been working there for about 8 years. And before that, did a couple of years in aerospace as an electrical engineer, and then an additional 7 years in the automotive industry. So I've been in all three major technology industries, with the exception of consumer electronics. And most of the time it was as an engineer. And it wasn't until a couple of years ago that I started actually by title saying leading people. I know that you can always, as they like to say, you can lead people before you have the title, but the title is when you really feel the responsibility. And that's a big portion of it. So thanks for having me on, guys. So.
Well, excellent. Initially, Jake and I wanted to talk about coaches, from high school coaches to actual coaches in our lives. And we're going to punt. And it all came from Jake saying, dude, it's Mother's Day. And as I was thinking about this, a good friend of mine, Eric, we were drinking beer late last night, and we were talking about partners. And he goes, my dad would always say that he attributes 99% of his success to his partner, to his wife. And obviously, and there's different types of partners we have, and there's different types of relationships. But, you know, Jake and his wife have hosted me in Vegas, and we've gone out and we've seen concerts and we've had a blast together. And the same with Habib. And
hey, you got it.
it's just my nasally Midwest. And now you're in my head. You know, the same. I would have never met him and talked leadership or just drank beer and had fun and like celebrated our children together. And it comes from our partners. And so it's Mother's Day tomorrow. And I think partners and relationships are very important in leadership. And one of my favorite quotes, and it's my wife did take me for our honeymoon to the Great American Beer Festival. So, you know, I have a pretty cool wife as well. And a quote that I don't remember the first time, it was somewhere in college, and it was, the partner I was with was not the partner that I would be with forever. And this quote came up and it like kind of hit me, and it was, be a boss, date a boss, build an empire, you know. And I'm in Florida again because the projects are still ongoing and I had to be here. And my wife wasn't upset, and I was more upset that I had to go and not be there to celebrate her on Mother's Day. And I'm sure some shoes were purchased in replacement of that love, but partners are important, you know, in life, in relationship, and on our teams. And that's what I'd like to start by talking about, is our partners.
Yeah. You know, my wife, I would not be who I am today without my wife. You know, my background, Brock, I've been all over the world. And, you know, when I had to go, you know, do that project up near Tonopah, I mean, I spent months and months in the middle of nowhere. And my wife never complained about it. I was the one who was complaining about having to go back up there all the time. I mean, just this week I had to get on a plane and go to San Diego for a project. And, you know, I'm always the one that's more upset because I'm the one who hates being away from my family. And, you know, it still amazes me that my wife is just this person that just supports me no matter what. And I don't think I can say thank you enough. You know, Mother's Day seems like not enough to say thank you for all the things that she's done for me. You know, partners, I love that mentality because that's how I always viewed in the military when I was assigned a senior sergeant. That's how I always viewed it was we were like two partners and two different personalities. And most of them would tell you that I was supposed to be the good partner, you know, good cop, bad cop kind of mentality. You know, and they would be kind of the more stricter version and I would be the nicer version. And that's kind of how we would operate. But it all depends on personality matchups. And that's, you know, what we talk a lot about is adaptive leadership. And that's the first adaptive move that I would make is discovering, okay, this is the person that's going to be close to me. So I need to figure this person out first. And then from there, we'll figure out the team together. So I love this topic and I think it's a great topic.
Yeah.
Mr. Badoon.
Yeah.
I have heard you say I have a wife and I have a work wife. And I have also been in that position where somebody you know, they know you as good as you know yourself. Talk about that.
Yeah. You know, I kind of want to touch a little bit on what Jake said too, though. You know, when I was kind of starting out engineering and I was with Devin, I probably would have been comfortable just staying in Dearborn, Michigan for a good portion of my life, probably still be doing the same thing today. But I had an opportunity to come up where somebody said, you know, you want to travel to Europe for 6 months to learn about sensors. And I didn't have the courage, honestly, to do it for 6 months. And Devin and I weren't married yet. We were certainly dating for a long time. But she's like, you got to do it. And I was going to be away from her for 6 months. I was more nervous about going period anywhere by myself because I was just kind of a young kid, you know, just getting into engineering, never really experienced something like that before. And she certainly gave me the courage to do it because I didn't have it myself, but that changed my whole career. So I ended up getting international experience, understanding the world outside of this small town in eastern side of Michigan. And then I got another job in California and I started to be comfortable with traveling and understanding that things are so much different. And I think there's little things like that, that your wife or significant other can do for you when you don't even realize you don't have it. So I always like to reflect on that. But Devin, and the other thing Jake, you touched on, I promise I'll answer your question, Brock, but Jake, you had said, you know, adaptive leadership styles. So it's funny because my wife can be pretty commanding. She's a strong, very strong leader. And I have to be a pretty strong leader at work. And I got to be honest with you, when I get home, I turn that mode off. I go into a supporting style is what I like to call that, where I just don't want to have to butt heads with a commanding person. I can, I know how to, and I use it when I need to. But to be entirely honest, sometimes after a long day of trying to be something, having all that responsibility for so many people and all those products, it's kind of nice to not have to make the decisions sometimes and have somebody that can do it for you. It's really, there's a lot of little things like that, that it might be perceived a certain way, but if you're comfortable with it and understand it, it's actually a good thing at times. So I don't have to manage budgets at home, but I manage budgets at work all damn day. So it's kind of nice, I'm going to be honest with you. So, okay. Well, anyways, going back to your question, Brock, work wife versus wife. At work, I've heard the phrase has been used. I It's when you connect with somebody at work who's considered a best friend, right? And it just happens to be a different sex. But the phrase itself, what it's really getting at, and this is why where I talk about it, somebody for some reason you connect with that has the same overall views but can challenge you to a different level. And I did find that person, a coworker of mine. I won't drop the name just for an anonymity and respect and all that. But I think going into it when we joined this, or she was already a member of this team for like 12 years, and I got brought in, and you could tell immediately on guard, who's this new leader? What's he going to be like? And I knew because of somebody with 12 years in that team, that's somebody I'm going to have to connect with and find a way to work with very closely, because I can't come in and just start recommending changes. This is kind of like a staple of the group. So I spent a lot of time trying to get to know that person. Really, it was all about building the relationship. I didn't even worry about business. Just tried to figure out, you know, her kids, her husband, what's her dog's name, all the things that when you really try to meet somebody new and connect with them, that's how you can start influencing that relationship. So, but the ultimate point of that story is once I got to that point where I built that relationship, the discussions we have when we make decisions together, that person can do the same thing for you when you're struggling with a decision, like going to Belgium, for example. Now I have that person at work. Even though we're not on the same team anymore, we still have such a strong work relationship that she does that for me at work, the same way Devin does it for me at home. So I guess to wrap it all up, that's what I mean when I talk about a work wife.
It's crazy where we are in the 21st century. There are powerhouse women and there's powerhouse men, and who gave that designation, you know, and there's two levels there. There's the, there is the dynamic of working with the opposite sex. One, there's three men on here talking about Mother's Day and about the opposite sex, and we don't have a representative to give us that feedback. And I can think of two right now, including my wife. So three, and really Devin or Jess, you know, I would love to hear their feedback on how we are when we come home, or how they push us, drive us, you know. Chelsea has supported me every time I've switched jobs, and I have always looked at the next opportunity, the next adventure. I've loved the companies I've worked for, and I've always left gracefully. I would like to say, for the most part, if there's somebody that I needed to, you know, make a nod at and say, you know, I'm not going to miss you. You know, sometimes you do that. But she has always been supportive, and we might have an opportunity to work internationally. And she's like, I'm bringing the kids. It's a thing. And getting outside of our bubble, you know, and looking at the rest of the world is very important to having a good leadership perspective. To that point, in Latin America, Mother's Day starts on Friday. You know, they celebrate, and maybe it even starts earlier than that, but you know, all of these projects shut down and everybody goes home, and they go out on Saturday and they do a huge thing on Sunday with brunch. And you know, these, it was beautiful, because in North America, really the States, it's we allow our job to just push something like that aside. How dare you miss Christmas, you know, but Mother's Day. Okay. And yes, there's sacrifices that have to be had. And as this podcast went out and we gained some momentum on it, I got a email, and it wasn't to the Leaders Drink Last email. It was to my personal email. So it was somebody that I knew in the industry that could find me on LinkedIn, that said, you made a comment about, you know, the end of the week comes and people go home and they decompress. And we don't do that around here. We work 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And some people just have to deal with that. And I thought about, as I'm reading this, and one, global perspective gives us many views and people and values and what is happening. But second, to believe that the podcast is about people working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or two shifts, you know, and not going home isn't a perspective I want to have. You know, even if we are on a long project and we're deployed somewhere, there is an end, right? And we also, when we're on these big projects and we're working with these teams, we have to recognize that they're missing their families, but also we still have to find time for them to decompress. So even, hey buddy, we don't quit. We're 7 days a week, two shifts. You will burn everybody out. Something is not going to work out. And Habib earlier said, I didn't see your text last night, Brock, after I got the schedule put together for this, because you were focused on something and it was late, right?
Yeah, it was a big back order problem. I could talk about it a little. I would say that I took on this team in this portfolio, I want to say about 4 or 5 months ago. And a couple of years in the making, there's this problem where some material is going end of life. What that really means is you can't get it anymore. It happens to be a component of one of our best-selling products. And a lot of people rely on these products because they're life-saving type devices. And some testing we were doing didn't go so well because of measurements being backwards. So I say you measure from grams to milligrams. Somebody made that mistake, so the results looked good when they were actually bad. And I just got done telling everybody things were going well the day before in a big senior leadership team meeting. So I immediately am going to look like the world's biggest liar when I communicate this news. But you can't control that. And that's where I talk about, I've heard the phrase called of gravity issues. There's only so much as a leader you can control. You can't control a mistake like that. It's not like you're going to be the one who's going to go into the data, read it, analyze it, and then give it to your leadership team. That's what you have engineers and teams for. You got to trust them. In this instance, it didn't work out. So what I was doing was formulating a big plan to avoid going into an even bigger backorder. So right now, there's a big backorder. We're getting people screaming at us and saying, where's this product? We need it. I had to make some pretty quick, expensive decisions on a plan A and a plan B, a plan C and a plan B. And I put two plan C and D into effect because plan A and B let me down. So that was kind of what I was doing yesterday. It was kind of late, but feeling good about it. Those moments, you realize you get this thing called imposter syndrome, right? I've talked to you about this, Brock, but imposter syndrome is when you get a role, you walk in, you're around a bunch of other leaders, and you're thinking to yourself, I don't belong in this group. These are a bunch of regular badasses around me, and I'm just this guy who walked in. I can't do this. And I didn't really feel the strength of what my leadership has become over time and my decision-making ability until yesterday, because everybody asked me what we're going to do, and somehow I had two plans, like, go do this, go do that. And I don't even know where it came from. It was just... It just came quick to me. I had a plan. Maybe I had been thinking about this scenario in the past. And if it happened, I certainly do think about things strategically long term. But what shocked me is in the moment I actually delivered the plan, I had this epiphany, like, oh my God, I just made a quick reaction leader decision just like that. So it was pretty cool. Pretty cool thing to experience.
Yeah, I've certainly experienced that in my career. You know, I resonate with what you said, Habib. You know, most of the leadership positions I've ever been put in, I always thought I'm not ready for this. You know, a good example was when I was, you know, probably around 24, and I say that, and I'm I'm 29 now, and Brock's rolling his eyes at me because I'm.
No, I'm not.
Because I'm not. I'm not quite 30 yet, but.
I'm jealous. Not rolling my eyes. I'm jealous.
Too. I'm jealous too. Don't worry.
Yeah. I got put in. You know, we had my superior. In the military. He got selected for an assignment early, and they. Long story short, I had to step into a role where I was in command of, 400 plus people. And this is a 24-year-old kid standing there in a room full of foremen and supervisors that were, twice my age, had been doing this longer than I had been alive. And as I walked into the room, I said, oh my God, like, I'm not going to be able to do this. And I think, what you're talking about is you reach this moment where you just start to own your leadership style, and you understand, what your style is and what your abilities are. And when you own that, you start to realize it doesn't really matter necessarily, even if you don't have that epiphany moment, you don't have the answer. If you're comfortable being a leader, you can walk into the room and say, and this is what I said when I was 24, I said, hey, look, I'm not going to have all the answers, but the people in this room, we're going to come up with the answers, and I'm going to rely on you to do your jobs. And that's the moment where I got comfortable in saying, maybe I don't have plan C or D or even A or B, but this is our team and I'm leading this team and we're going to figure it out. And, I wanted to touch back to something else you mentioned. We were talking about culture. And one thing I really liked that you said, Abib, was just taking the time before you get to business to get to know someone. And that's something I experienced when I went to Korea is, I was working with the Korean Air Force, and their culture, I learned so much before you even talk about, business of why we were there and what we were doing. We had to spend our first couple of meetings just talking about who we were and, our cultural folks that educate us when we go into someone else's country so we don't offend people, because we're Americans and we have this way of thinking. They said, hey, look, when you go in to talk to these people, don't go in there and start demanding answers on, infrastructure and where's this and where's that. You are going to go there. You're not going to have a pen and a paper. You're just going to sit down. You're going to drink whatever they offer you. And you're just going to talk about stuff, whatever they want to talk about. And so, I've always kept that in the back of my mind is that I like that approach to business. And some people, Brock was talking about, and we talked about it last week, was some people are just that, I think America has that hard charging attitude. And I agree, Brock, we talked about it, that it burns people out and it becomes dangerous. And I think there's more value in investing time in getting to know people or building that, that comfortable culture in your team before you get to business, because it pays off in the long run.
Hey, Brock, what were you talking about? The long game, right? Simon Sinek long game. I swear, I think when you build relationships even with your team and you spend the time to do that first, playing the long game.
Yeah. it's great. Simon, Bob Sutton did Good Boss, Bad Boss. And we got Yaka. We have these, Simon specifically, the name of Leaders Drink Last comes from, his concept of the book Leaders Eat Last. And it's very much I feel like he's a 21st century philosopher giving us the insight. And a lot of it is so simple that we should know it, but somehow we've hard charged past it. And when we build a team, and that team doesn't actually even have to work with us. I met a good friend in January. She was on the Driller Cast. Her name's Nancy, and she works in San Antonio. So she's a geologist and a very, very just awesome, insightful badass. She listened to last week's podcast and goes, I like it. she gave me, and it's funny because she calls it feedback. I call it criticism, and she cringes, and I joke with her about it. But she's like, I enjoyed everything but the end. And I'm like, oh, what was wrong with end? And she's like, you said you don't know where this is going. She's like, that's BS. You know where this is going. And it was me in a cultural moment of trying to like be Simon and be humble. Right. And so, Habib, you had the situation of needing to make a decision, a critical decision that's going to be the outcome. And those decisions are tough when we don't have a team around us or we don't have partners that can also give us that. We were able to make a microsecond decision because the team around me had my back and I had their back. And if we failed, we'd figure out plan B. And working internationally, and I've the same with you guys, worked internationally. Again, our United States heritage, we're not on the same systems as everybody else. And when I hit Latin America and I need to be looking at liters per minute, you know, in cubic meters and those things, it's great if I got my smartphone, you know, and I've gotten to a point where I'm conditioned and I can do the conversions I need to do. But those are when mistakes get made, you know, and where I look at my colleague or I look at my customer and I own it. You know what, you know, we use, because of fantasy football, we're never giving this up. So, you know, we have our standard units and then the rest of the world has metric. And then it gets crazier, other parts that adopt some American units and then others. But when we can laugh about it, you know, when we have partners that, you know, can see the flaw and can fill that piece, that's important, you know, and it's about that empathy and love.
Go ahead.
I can totally get behind that. And I really, really like what both of you guys just said too. And when it comes to, you mentioned fantasy football, I was the grams and milligrams measurement, yards or meters. That was I wonder if the issue you gave me a thought, but I wonder if the issue that I just experienced yesterday was because of something just like that. You know, pounds, grams, milligrams, there was an error in the measurement. I don't even know how to communicate that yet, but you gave me a big thought there. So anyways, go ahead, Jake. Sorry.
No, I mean, you know, I just get locked into listening to other people talk. That's just, I'm an attentive person. Yeah. So it's just my personality. When someone's talking, you know, one of my pet peeves as a leader is I've walked into leaders' offices and they often are multitasking while I'm trying to talk to them, and nothing, you know, infuriates me more when that happens. But, you know, Habib, you said you worked in the aerospace industry, and that's, you know, when I think about, you know, being an engineer and leadership and how, you know, what you talked about with precision and how that plays a role, you know, and we think about space, right, where everything has to be exactly correct. I always wonder, how do you motivate people that have to put that much attention to detail in what they're doing? Like, you know, I mean, Brock and I talk about construction. Construction is very broad. I mean, if somebody makes a mistake, it's like, okay, let's backtrack and figure out, you know, I mean, there are catastrophic mistakes that can be made, obviously, especially when you're doing structures and things like that. But it's not like, hey, we're sending this plane or this rocket into the air. You know, if somebody makes a mistake, it's catastrophic.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'll give you some some reassurance that'll give you a little bit more comfort. We don't put that much pressure on people because it is a catastrophic failure. So there's a way to get around that. One, you certainly communicate that it is life or death in these situations, but you take it a little bit out of their hands. And I don't mean that like you don't trust them. It's that you make it easier by giving them multiple systems to solve the same problem. So we call that redundancy. It's not to say you can't trust a person to make a safe design, but we don't want to leave it to just human chance. We want to put multiple designs. So if I have one engineer doing, let's say, the landing gear, I'm going to have another engineer that does a secondary redundant portion of the same landing gear, and a third and a fourth. And that's to take the chances down even further. So in aerospace, the way you reduce the risk of failure is by having multiple circuits doing the exact same thing. And if this one fails, this one kicks in. And if that one fails, that one kicks in. So we typically shoot for like 1 × 10⁻⁷ chance of failure. And that's a requirement. So it's really low. So when there are situations like plane crashes, really took something pretty dang crazy to knock out multiple redundant systems for that to happen. So that gives a little bit less pressure on the person is really the point I'm trying to make, because that's really hard to put on anybody, even a leader in that situation.
And do these people, when they're working on the redundancies, do they know that each other are working on these redundancies? So are they communicating?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. And sometimes it's all done by the same engineer, but they have to give you 7 different ways to do it. So it's actually baked into requirements. So the government has requirements for flight worthiness. It's in there. You better meet this number. So it's a great question. And I can tell you it's not that much pressure on the person, because I think people would go crazy if they really knew that they were responsible for one thing. If it failed, a bunch of people will die. I don't know if that's totally. Yeah, that's a lot
of pressure. Yeah, that's a lot. Oh, I'm sorry, Jake, go.
Oh, no, I'm just imagining trying to do redundancies in a construction job, Brock, and how that would drive people insane. They would just run around thinking.
Well, so we have it, Jake, and it's a messy failure, unless you're good partners. Our redundancy comes from our engineers and inspectors looking at the work. The problem is there's no collaboration. I won't say there's no. There's times when collaboration is poor and we see them as either the brainiacs or the police. And so we try to complete something to a point that they can't use X-ray vision and determine where the flaws are. You know, and then for me in the drilling industry, everything's subsurface, you know, and I was excited to work a project in the Southeast because of the engineering firm that they had hired for oversight. And then the job was already behind schedule, was in trouble. We had some leadership issues, ended up a crew broke a severe safety rule, and the leader on site didn't take accountability. He said, I can't control everything these kids do. And that dumb kid was bound to do something like that. And to me, hearing this, I went, wait, we as the leaders, regardless, you know, I know we see all these quotes that say, sometimes you're just a manager and you're not really a leader, but you know what? No, you're just a shitty leader. You're still a leader, you know? And this guy said, it's not my problem. And I let the entire crew go because it was just the entire attitude. There were so many chances for us to turn it around, to, you know, change the culture. And I tried. And the resolution was they weren't my partners. They were actively working against me. And after multiple chances, you know, and then that safety situation, it was peace out. But so this project's bad. And then I meet this engineer that I'm so excited to work with. and he doesn't trust anybody. I was a kid, you know, and he's got all this credentials, this credentialism, you know, and that's in the construction industry. We just pound that out, you know, and it's silly because we need the credentials. We need the smarts. We need the collaboration. Where what's fun right now, having the discussion we are with, you know, a technology guy, there's so much, there's to innovate. We have to have partners and collaborate.
Absolutely. Right?
And to influence that, to be the leader that's driving that. We can't just rush in every time and save the day. That's not a good leader quality. You know, we give them the vision, we let them go. You know, and Jake, you've influenced my leadership on that many times about, you know, letting go. And then I have to go, wait, why isn't this? Oh, that's right. There's no military discipline. You know, no, I'm joking partly, but you know, there is an aspect of that, you know, with chain of command and selecting the right team. And it's a balance, but it comes back to trust. Trust in our partners, trust in our mothers, you know, trust in every aspect.
Yeah, you touched on a lot of stuff there, Brock. I mean, that you just, you know, we could have about 10 different discussions based on half the stuff you just said. you know, trust is certainly a big deal. I mean, you know, it's something that we always talk about, you know, with the military is trusting people and developing an environment of trust. And one of the things you touched on is actually, you know, when you had to let go of that team, that's a tough decision to make as a leader in itself is, and the, you know, I'm always thinking movies. So the movie that comes to mind is when The Rock in Walking Tall gets elected a sheriff. He walks into the sheriff's department, says, "You're all fired." And, you know, the former sheriff is saying, "They're all good deputies. I can vouch for them." And he's like, "Yeah, see you later." Sometimes the answer is to start from scratch. But, you know, you brought up something that's important. And that's no matter what happens as a leader is taking accountability and responsibility for what happens. You know, and I wrote about that recently when I talked about being someone who's led a team and then going back to being a part of a team, and watching and working for somebody who did exactly what you talked about is, you know, no trust in the people on the team to do their job and what they're, you know, no empowerment on us to really take ownership of tasks and things. And then when things didn't work out, it was our fault. You know, and I'm sitting there and I, like you, I have grown and matured a little and I gave the feedback and ultimately it didn't work out. I ended up leaving that team. But, you know, when I did it, you know, as I mentioned before, I talked about just developing that, and Habib mentioned it, you know, talking about developing that trust between the person that's your right-hand person or left-hand person, whatever hand you want to talk about, you know, that comes first. And then, you know, I really liked how you put it. You said not you as a leader making the decision, but you guys making the decision together. Because when I found that person, that's how I did it also. You know, I'd have guys come to me and say, "Well, can we do this?" And the first thing I'd say is, "Did you talk to so-and-so?" Because, you know, I'm going to go right and talk to that person before I make a decision. So you probably should just go talk to them, you know, and that's kind of how I operated it with my trust partner.
So shifting gears on, you know, our teams have evolved. And so it's Mother's Day. My mom was kind of a stay-at-home mom, but also we had a horse farm and she trained horses and stuff, so she was home. But now our teams and our employees have had mothers that are powerhouses that have been, you know, bosses and supervisors and influential to industries. which wasn't how previous generations had it, you know? So you look at that situation and then you look at all the different, you know, the youngest of the millennials right now and into Gen Z and how they interact, and they've had, you know, professional parents, you know, they have people that are working, and some of it's due to the housing crisis and other things that have happened. You look at influential leaders right now and how they speak about what mom and dad did. And then we look at this workforce and, you know, we're supposed to collaborate as a team and stuff. And it's, we have to evolve that in the construction industry, like, you know, the tech industry, Jake, you know, and we haven't figured that out yet. Last night I was, again, my buddy Eric came down, he's helping me pack up the house, and we're having beers and it's late. And we start talking about, there's these college students that are like 22, 23, and they're all studying at this brewery that we're at, right? You know, and there it's, I assume it's summer one, graduation just happened, but they're studying, right?
My question is, how the hell would you study at a brewery? I'd never get anything done.
I graduated with a 385 studying at breweries in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Or maybe I just chose easy classes, you know, rock and roll development and Genesis. And only one day of that class was about Phil Collins. And I was pissed, you know. Anyway, these kids, and I say kids, they're not, they're adults. We got to get away from saying that a 22-year-old is a kid. That's bull crap. Gen Z is going to be better, faster, smarter than we are right now. And Jake, you at 29, I'm jealous. But this next generation, I'm going to call them the Zoomers. It's not Gen Z anymore. It's the Zoomers.
I like that.
They have, what's that?
I hope that sticks. I really like that.
They have every bit of information we have. They have everything to learn from. They have Simon, they have Yako talking to them every day, and they can be, I'd love to see us have a president, male or female, or however they want to identify, that's in their mid 40s that has had a worldview and has done all of this stuff, because it's possible. And us as leaders, if we recognize this right now, we get to help nurture and develop. And that comes back to the teams you're running. What's the average age in the tech industry for a team that you have right now?
Yeah, so where I work is a little unique because it's pretty young for the most part. And I say young meaning 23 to 45. But there are certainly groups, the business unit I'm part of has as high as 60 and as low as 22. I can't say for all the tech industry. I know that aerospace is typically older. People with a lot of experience, you know, just like the airplanes, the technology they use on airplanes is old, reliable. You work with what's reliable. But in the tech industry, you need that broad range for innovation purposes. So if you think about these big tech companies like Facebook, Google, they're always looking for young folks right out of school, because they bring a fresh perspective. The place I work at, you know, we've got both. And it's a topic, I think we had talked about this a while back, but if you're leading people with that different age dynamic, it's kind of fun to, it goes back to what Jake said, it goes back to what we talked about, but adaptive leadership immediately changes between those age groups. The older, more experienced engineers typically like to be left alone. Like, if you're not talking to them, everything's fine. The younger, when I say younger, in the mid-range at this point, millennials, the constant running joke about millennials is that people still think millennials are like 18 right now. And, you know, millennials are almost 41 years old, I think, at this point. I'm an older millennial. There's a whole category about the older millennials. They call them Zennials at times because we're something in between a Gen X and a Zennial or a millennial. But millennials typically like a little bit more attention from their leader. I don't know if it's just an upbringing thing, but I do pick up on that. They really like some time, you know, just to connect. It doesn't even have to be about business, just connect. And then the youngest generation right now, I've got a couple. I had this misconception, and I'm going to say I'm guilty of it, thinking that they weren't going to be able to go into the ocean. I'm going to throw you into the ocean, and you're going to have to figure this out. A lot of times, I would say they would struggle with that. But one person proved me wrong last week. Threw her into an ocean, and I wanted to see if she could handle it, and she came out fighting, and I was impressed. So it's one of those things where now managing that person, now leading that person, just give them purpose. For some reason, I think that's what they want. If you can give them strong purpose and connect the same way you would with a millennial, you give them a strong purpose. Why are they doing what they're doing? They seem to be driven by that. That's what I picked up on with the different age groups so far. And Gen X is also just leave me alone type thing. I forgot to talk about Gen X.
You know, Gen X, which many of the millennials are, you know, their parents are Gen Xers. And I'm still saying, because I was born in 1980, I am the end of Gen X. And I, you know, the same as Jake doesn't want to be called a millennial either. And he keeps trying to sneak into the Gen X generation by saying he's an old soul. And, you know, anyway, I'm just picking on Jake now. Gen X had tough parents or divorced parents. And so they really, really instilled that, you know, the love and these are my children and nurtured. And that's where we got into millennials with trophies. And all of that aspect was to the same as we want to be a better boss than our previous boss. And, you know, Gen Xers wanted to be better parents than their last parents. And so, yeah, millennials do like nurturing. And obviously we've put these generational designations and say that everybody fits into one box, and it's wrong. You know, we have to know where somebody comes from. And that's when the, you know, leader drinks last by having that 501 discussion and having the vision and the purpose. What do you want? You know, and it's very important for us to know what they want, you know, and the same with where we're going to go next. And I would 100% work for either one of you two today. I had an excellent 28-year-old Scott that worked with me. And now he just took a powerhouse job in Texas, and I'm so damn proud of him. I said, Scott, I'm going to work for you one day. And he's like, that doesn't make any sense, Brock. I like you as a boss. And why would that happen? And I was like, because that means I was successful. That means that I built you up to the place that you needed to be so that you could make the decisions you wanted to make and you could move on. And the construction industry sucks at this right now, that we all damn kids can't work. And apparently you're a kid until your back is broken and you're divorced. I think that's when they stop calling you a kid in the construction industry, is when you get your first divorce. No, and that's a horrible, horrible insight to that. But if I could get any of my team to a point that I'm working for them, one, maybe I get to be the 60-year-old old guy for real, or 65, and I'm working as a consultant. And that's when I'm making fat bank, right? Like, because I have this great leader that's like, I need this person to still be part of my team. But it's important. Jake, go.
Yeah. Lots of good stuff between both of you. You know, one thing you touched on, Brock, and I'm jealous of Habib because you're right. Our industry, Brock Construction, is very, you know, we're so behind the curve when it comes to this idea of we need all of these different gaps of people for innovation, right? We need all of these perspectives to be innovative and to solve the problems that we have. And we're not in that position. And it's interesting because, you know, you touched on seeing a younger leader of our country. And I think our country's in that transition right now where we're starting to see younger and more different gaps of people get involved and saying, hey, it's time that we need to move forward and we need to have these younger voices and we need to have this breadth of people giving perspectives in our country. Because, and it's interesting because some of the older folks that are in the leadership of our country are, you can tell they're trying to adapt to this and trying to figure out how to work with these people that are younger. And our industry is, I don't know where we're at, if we're even transitioning, because you're right, we're not very good at it. You know, we have this culture in our industry that if you haven't had these kind of milestone experiences that, you know, I'm not going to say it was a divorce because that is a bad analogy. whatever you're, you know, in our industry, whatever it is, whether it's, you failed a project or whatever it is, like if you haven't had these milestone experiences, you're automatically seen as, well, you're not experienced and you're just this kid and you don't know what, I can't trust you to do anything. And it's, you know, it's very, very interesting. And, you know, as much as we talk about, you know, I don't really like labels, but, you know, we look at generations. And I think to a degree, you know, the labels and the things that we talk about, it's very interesting to look at generations and see their overall experience, right? I mean, I avoid being a millennial as much as possible. My argument is I came before the internet. So I lived in a world without internet at one point in my life. But, you know, I think it goes back to something we've discussed in the past, Brock, is everybody has a different experience. And we had this discussion on DrillerCast, where we talked about the generations and our influences, right? And I think, you know, it all ties in because it's important for younger people to get exposure to older generations to understand and get that, you know, just as much as we talked about cultural experience across the world, we need that experience right in our own backyard, you know. And I love sitting down and talking to people who are different ages than me. That's why Brock and I are good friends. You know, if I wasn't the person that I am seeking to get, you know, different experiences, I never would have walked up to Brock after he taught that class and said, hey, I like your style. And I dig, you know, what you're teaching because I understand it. And let's go have a beer, you know, or, you know, just like we're talking about mothers, my wife is not a very like super outgoing person, but in the bar that we met in, she played a prank on me. I was leaning up against a table that said was reserved for two people. And she pretended to be one of those two people and said, get off my table. You know, that's how leadership is. You have to have, you know, we talk about adaptive. It's not just people who are younger than you. It's not just people, you know, you have to adapt to just people. You know, leading involves people, whether it's construction, whether it's technology, whatever it is, you have to have the courage and be willing to adapt to just people in general. You know, my cousin is an architect and I always put it like this. My cousin was the guy who would talk to the person on the bus who was talking to themselves that people would avoid on that bus. I've seen him do it. He would sit down next to that person that everybody else was avoiding on the bus and try to have a conversation with them. And that's what good leadership is.
Absolutely. You know, for me, and maybe this is my cheat code to working with younger generations and wanting to have younger generations around me. One, I get to hang out with them. You know, because I do enjoy seeing what's next and reminiscing and remembering being that age. And I have a lot of friends that are the same age as me, and I'll be 41 in July, that act like they're 55 or 65, where, no, I can't go get a beer. It's 8:30 at night. Or, you know, no, I really would like to come to this barbecue, Brock, but you should have told me a couple weeks ago. Like youth is unpredictable and will, you know, I'm getting ready to teach the hydro field camp for Western Michigan University with grad students and undergrads, and I will host a barbecue. And I'll tell you what, all of the college students will, you know, 25 students will show up and they'll bring different beers and kombucha, and some will show up with, you know, they don't go, oh, you're not going to have a vegetarian alternative. No, they just show up with giant mushroom patties or, you know, an impossible burger, and they immerse themselves. And I love that. And if we're going to be good companies and we're going to grow and we're going to innovate and we're going to collaborate, those that were born with the internet or were at 2 years old understand how to scroll an iPad, you know, or flying drones, or all of the technology that they're given right now is the reason we're going to be able to progress. And I'll tell you what, Caterpillar and Komatsu, and you look at all the big equipment on construction sites right now, it's progressing also. They got aerospace people, they got, you know, farm med people that are in there, and we have GPS designed dozers that are being able to grade without us getting in and out. And we have all these things happening, and there's going to be a moment where the 20-year-old shows up on the job site and he looks at that and he goes, yeah, I've been playing this simulator from my laptop since I was 11. Oh yeah, prove it. And he or she is going to get in that vehicle and be able to run it, maybe not as perfectly as, say, somebody that's been running it every day for the last 5 years, but their learning curve is going to be weeks instead of months and years. And we have the highway bill coming. We have this huge infrastructure that's, this bill has been coming for since the, you know, 2010, 2011, you know, and we have bridges and we have all this stuff that's falling apart, and we're going to need these people, you know? And the same is with this crazy pandemic and the tech industry, and you know what Habib's doing with his teams, you know, we need people. We need people to solve ever-growing crises and situations, because we're heading towards 10 and a half billion people. I mean, that's what it is. I work in water because I know we're in a point where the people that I work with are going to be 25 years younger than me, and they have to be better than me, or we're not going to be able to supply the water that we need to sustain life.
Yeah, you know, Brock, I forgot one other thing that you mentioned before is, you know, working for somebody that you that worked for you. That's the philosophy they always taught us in the military, is you train the person to replace you. You know, and I have seen it in, and I'm only 29, you know, I've mentored guys that I've watched grow, and they're doing, you know, some of them have surpassed me, you know, and some, and I'm not at all offended by it. And I've, you know, to touch on your other point, I've seen that happen with the, you know, you brought up Komatsu and the construction equipment. I've seen that 20-year-old come on site. I've had that moment. It's already here. You know, it's not forthcoming. It's here. And what, you know, we also have the older guys who grew up on the joysticks, you know, on the old school. But we have both, right? That's the thing, is we still have the ability for those two to coexist. And you're right, you know, those tools are critical for us to get faster and better, because that's where we have to go, right? We need that innovation to be faster and better. And Habib knows all about that, and his industry is everything needs to be faster and better, and it needs to have happened yesterday, right?
Yep, something just like that. But it also needs to stay up to date, because somebody will replace you. You know, you gotta have all the new features. We're constantly looking for ways to appeal to our customers and our you know, caregivers, because anything that can make their job easier through innovation, they're going to want, and they will buy it and replace you if you don't keep up with it. I like to talk about, if you look at some past people in the past that didn't stay up with the times or keep up with innovation, there's a couple quotes out there that I think about. I remember Thomas J. Watson from IBM once said, it was either him or Ken Olson from Digital Equipment Corporation. I don't remember which one, but one of them said, I think there's a world market for about 5 computers. And they couldn't be more wrong, clearly. And the other one might have said, there's no reason for any individual to have a computer in their home. I might have the two switched, but one of the two both said that, I promise you that. And they were both so wrong, because look at today. I mean, computers are, the world runs on computers, but now they're even more needed at home. So every industry is going to be challenged by keeping up with innovation, and this younger generation coming out is going to be a big part of that, because they're going to get creative and things are changing.
There's so many good stories in the past of people who thought something wasn't going to be the next thing. And then it, you know, I think, you know me, Brock, I'm always thinking movies. I'm thinking when Henry Ford II teamed up with Shelby Carroll, and Ford was going in the tank, and then they went over and they ran the Le Mans, and the GT40 came out, which Carroll Shelby's museum is right down the street from my house. So, you know, I love going in there and seeing that innovation and somebody saying Ford will never win the Le Mans, and then they did.
You know, and the innovation with Ford in the first place, you know, there's the quote, and it's debated if it was said or not said, but he said, if I'd asked my customer what they wanted, they'd have told me a faster horse. You know, and that's the men who said about computers, there was, you know, with that innovation happening, there was vision. And then that's how we've gotten to the point where we're right now all in 3 different parts of the country having this discussion, right? Today, before we started, I looked up and I go, dude, your camera looks great. And he's like, yeah, it's not a stock camera. And he grabs the box and he's like, it's a, you know, a Logitech. And until I'd seen how crisp and clear without all the goofy lights, like, there's an innovation. I didn't think I needed an external camera. Now I'm going to go get one, you know, because of that. And it's that feedback guidance that, you know, good friends, partners, you know, teams give you, you know, and looking at where does it go from here? And we got to break the stigma of calling people kids. If you call my 3-year-old son a baby right now, he goes, I'm not a baby. I'm a big kid. You know, he's skipping toddler. I'm a big kid, you know, and I just celebrated a 5th birthday with the Baydoons. And they're growing up fast. And the things that, from jumping on motorized little vehicles to playing with remote controls and that stuff, heck yeah, there's a chance that they'll be helping colonize or explore off world. You know, we're heading in that direction, and we don't get to have this next generation without moms, and it's Mother's Day, right? And it is 11:16 a.m. Eastern time. It's Leaders Drink Last, and today it's going to be Leaders Drink Early, and I don't expect either one of my friends or colleagues to do this, but I have a Volatile Elements by Ology Brewing, and this is going to go well with my my waffles and bacon that I had this morning. Don't tell Dave that I just cracked a beer at 11 and that I have to podcast with him later today. But toast to moms, you know?
Toast to moms.
Cheers.
Cheers.
I don't know if it's bad luck to toast with a sparkling water, but I'm doing it.
Hey, if my mom were here, she would tell me it's too early for me to be drinking anyway.
At 8:17 in the morning. So we have to break the stigma, kids. And that's what it, they're young professionals. They're professionals. You know, we're growing as a society, as leaders. You know, there's a couple things that I'm really working not to say. One of them in my team meetings is guys. You know, I don't want to do that. You know, there was an Ask Brock a few weeks ago that said, how many men do you need on this construction site? And I came back with, you know, first, we're 21st century society and it's people, because I know some badass women. I know some people that identify differently from that, and they're great professionals and they're doing it. And that's where we are in the world. We either adapt, and this is Jake brought me, Jake baptized me by fire with adaptive leadership. And it's so important for us. And part of that is getting back to identifying and recognizing those people and where they come from.
Yeah. You know, and this will be my final thought for the morning. You know, the whole reason or the whole motivation for me behind adaptive leadership is, you know, we've gotten to do some pretty fun and amazing things in our industries. And, you know, as we move towards innovation and inclusiveness in our industry, you know, this is how I felt in engineering school. You know, I wasn't always the smartest guy. And this is kind of where I developed this perspective. Was I looked at engineering school and I thought, they're turning people, you know, we had weed out classes, is what they call it, classes where they try to get rid of people. And I was thinking, why would you want to get rid of people? You're turning away people that could revolutionize your industry because maybe they don't fit the mold that is of what is used to in this industry or this field of study. And that's kind of one of the thoughts that drove me down that path is, you know, people should have the ability to experience these things. You know, I want people, if people want to be in construction and they're a woman or whatever it is, you know, whatever you identify as or wherever your background is from, you should have that ability because it's exciting to see something get built from nothing, to watch something go from a piece of paper, to lead it, to have the opportunity to lead the team that does it. You know, that's really the driving factor behind adaptive leadership is sharing that experience that I want other people to have because I've had it and I think it's really cool. And I think other people, whether they're young, old, whatever it is, should have that opportunity. And that's kind of my, you know, wraparound thought for the week.
Hey, Brock, yeah. I'll give a last thought on this too, just to help kind of solidify what Jake just said. You know, you guys said it earlier, sometimes qualifications, you know, people like to flaunt their qualifications. I will say there's a lot to be said about the folks that have the experience over time. But the whole point of in the leadership position of teams of different ages, aside from adaptive leadership, is to cultivate the team to want to be able to communicate together regardless of age. And I think that's really the most important thing you can do. You build that trust, you build that team together. You make that 60-year-old feel like that 22-year-old are buddies, and you cultivate that, you're winning. And that's really that's what I shoot for with my teams. And nothing does it better than offsites. Take some time, take your team out, and go play some disc golf. Get them some beers, some sandwiches. It's amazing what'll happen. So, anyways, just want to throw that in there. Thank you guys so much. It's been a real pleasure being on this with you guys.
We definitely want to have you back and get into some real, you know, talk about some problems that we've, you know, overcome and those things. Today, with Mother's Day being tomorrow, I just realized that, you know, I don't get to be the professional I am without my partner. And I think we all believe that way. Yep. So that's kind of the direction we went for episode two. It's bold. But the last piece, if we're not hiring the next generation, it used to be, you just got to find the right people and hire the right people. But if we're not hiring the new generation, at some point we don't exist anymore. We're seeing this with specific companies. We're seeing this in the drilling industry. I'm seeing it with rig manufacturers that did not continue to cultivate a younger generation or question how we could do it better. I left one of them, you know, because it was just not the right direction. So we have to adapt. We have to find ways. And it's fun. Damn it. It's fun to envy. It's the only time I think it's okay to envy is when I see a Jake or a Scott or a Kelly that is going to be, when they're 40, three times the person I was. And to know that they get to be influential on the people behind them. You know, we have to be better than the leader that we had last. And I've had some good leaders and I've had some bad ones. And I've had some good ones that had mediocre influence. And I've had some bad ones that have been able to heavily influence everything. And it's our influence is what's important. And I want to give Jake a second because I just saw the twinkle in his eye and we're damn good friends and colleagues. And he's got a comment to make and then I'll close us out.
I was just thinking when I'm 40, you'll be, you know, some 50 or 60 or whatever. You can be the old guy and whatever I'm doing, I'll bring you in. I'll make you an intern, but I'll pay as an old intern to come in and teach all my young people about how things used to be done.
That would be great. some of the best times of my life was being an intern. So there's a quote, and it works well for our relationships, our partners that we lived with, and it works with our teams. And the quote is, a power couple is two people who are pretty impressive separately, but together they are true force to be reckoned with. And that takes a special kind of magic. And the fun thing about enjoying this Saturday morning with you guys is I know both of your wives, and they are, you know, powerful women. And I love the fact that my wife is one fierce woman, and it's a lot of fun, especially when Habib and I get out to dinner and watching those two run the nightlife. They encourage, and then us kind of stepping back and going, where are we going next? You know, and that's what we do this for. You know, if we can have teams that are built that we can go out and have fun and they can go out and have fun and not work 24/7, because sometimes in this industry, you kids got to understand that you never leave your job. No, you know, leaders drink less because we have more responsibility, and there's times and there's going to be the situations where we work late nights, but at the end of it, we need to go home, shut it off, and be with the ones we love. And that's, the Leaders Drink Last podcast, episode 2.
Cheers, everybody. Yes, it is 11:26, and I'm taking a second sip of a double IPA. Thank you, Ology. Happy Mother's Day, Mom, wife, Jess, Devin, my mother-in-law. She's a fierce woman. Happy Mother's Day to all of them. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
When we take that drink, we celebrate the people and the accomplishments and the projects, and knowing that in our heart, we did the right thing. Welcome to the Leaders Drink Glass podcast. If you enjoy it, please like and subscribe.